Welcome to Noon Edition here on WFIU. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times, along with today's co-host, Alexander McCall. And we're going to be talking about hemp. Indiana legislators legalized the growing of hemp last year, but it hasn't really taken off the way some expected it might. Some say a complex set of regulations and permissions makes it difficult for farmers. Some say the crop's connection with marijuana makes politicians wary of fixing the problems. This week, we're going to talk with three experts on what might be holding hemp back here in the state. We're going to talk about the diverse ways that it could be used, and we're going to talk about some legislation that's in the federal Congress about hemp. We've got our guests are all three joining us on by phone today. George Blankenbaker is a manager of Real Hemp and a member of the Indiana Hemp Industries Association Board of Directors. Jana Beckerman is a professor and extension plant pathologist at Purdue University. And Alan Kimball is here. He's a member of the North American Industrial Hemp Council. If you have questions or comments, please give us a call here in Bloomington at 812-855-0811 or 1-877-285-9348 outside of the Bloomington area. You can also join the live chat at wfiu.org/noonedition, and you can follow us on Twitter at Noon Edition. So welcome, all of you. Appreciate having all of you here. I think I want to direct my first question to Alan, a member of the North American Industrial Hemp Council. What is that council, and you know, what are the, you know, how would you define industrial hemp, and what are some uses for it? Kind of a bunch of questions there at once.
Well, I'll take the first question first. The North American Industrial Hemp Council was formed before my joining it. I think it was back in the 90s when there was an effort to take advantage of the multitude of opportunities offered by the hemp plant. And one of the founders of the council was Dr. Paul Malmberg, who for 25 years was a professor of botany at IU Bloomington. During that time, he became the world's leading academic expert in the plant genus cannabis, which composes both marijuana and industrial hemp, which are the main subsets of the cannabis species. The council has been working for all this time to try to get hemp approved at the national level. It is still banned. It is listed as a controlled substance by the Drug Enforcement Administration, and even though many states, now 20, have legalized industrial hemp within their boundaries, the federal government still prescribes it. It is not legal to grow it, except recently under certain conditions, which were caused by the last passage of the Farm Bill, which authorized universities and state agencies in states which have their own authorization legislation in place to grow what I say is, quote, research, unquote, plots of hemp to try to determine best species, applications, and all the rest of it. It's a foot in the door at the national level, but still farmers cannot freely go out and plant hemp because it isn't at the federal level, and it's an illegal crop.
And whoever wants to take this question, Ken, I'm interested. Why is it still controlled at the federal level? What are the federal government's concerns?
George, do you want to try that first?
Sure. Thank you. Really, it's a situation of misperception. There's still confusion that hemp is marijuana, or that it will lead into marijuana, or potentially be a gateway. So a lot of what we've been working on at the Hemp Industry Association level is education. And what we find is that when we educate both researchers as well as politicians, once they understand the actual facts and that these are two very distinct species of plant and all of the commercial potential of the industrial hemp, they're very much on board. And they ask how they can support us. But then when we ask them, well, can you come out publicly and state your support? They pull back and say, well, they can't, and the reason for that is because they understand their colleagues and constituents still have those same misperceptions that they had. And so what we're finding is that it's a ground roots effort to go out there and educate people to make them aware of the facts. And once it's understood, then people start coming on board.
Okay, I want to go to... I want to go to the educator. So, yeah, Jana, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you out.
So I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. So one of the problems with legalizing industrial hemp is the fact that there aren't clear techniques and methods that you can quickly and readily use in the field to distinguish between hemp and marijuana. So that is one of the issues. And, in fact, they're not different species either. They have been bred differently, but we're all talking – for the most part about the same species, which is cannabis sativa, that we're using to grow industrial hemp. A lot of people think they can walk into the field and just based on how the plant looks or how the plant smells, that would be a sufficient way to distinguish between marijuana and industrial hemp, and in fact that isn't. So that's part of the confusion as to why there's these holdups in these regulations. And of course there's always the argument of whether it's true or not, of a slippery slope.
So either I want to go back to either George or Alan, or even you, Jana. Can somebody tell us a little bit about what are some of the things industrial hemp can be used for?
Well, let me jump in just before. And George would be a great responder for that question, but I think it's important to describe the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana. Industrial hemp is defined as cannabis sativa that has less than 0.3% of tetrahydrocannabinol, which is THC, which is the narcotic element within the cannabis plant. And it is very difficult to look at a plant and see whether it's got 0.3 THC or less. Janet's exactly right. That's an issue. Now, going on to George, why don't you talk about the applications? There are so many.
Well, there really are. And Alan, I appreciate it. And appreciate Janet's correction. They're two distinct varieties. I like to frame it as a dog. You've got a German Shepherd and a poodle. They're very distinct, but they're both dogs. And within hemp, it has traditionally been used for industrial purposes going back thousands of years. And in America, it was used extensively at the founding of our country, used for rope, textiles, the sails of ships, et cetera. The oil was used in burning lamps, also used in paints. More recently, what we're finding is that there's been a move to more eco-friendly materials and lighter materials. And so one of the biggest commercial successes we've seen is in the automobile industry, where they're using it as non-woven fiber to make door panels and a variety of products in automobiles, replacing heavier fiberglass, et cetera. Very interestingly, we're starting to see some high-tech applications. There's a team of researchers at Clarkson University in New York. They used hemp fibers to make carbon nanosheets. That's a pseudo-graphene structure. It's a form of carbon that exists as a sheet, one atom thick. But what they use them for are supercapacitors. And the supercapacitors made with the hemp fibers performed on par or better than the commercial graphene at a fraction of the cost. And this is a big thing because the supercapacitors are the energy storage devices which transform the way electronics are powered. Hemp is showing to deliver some of the best power energy combinations for any carbon. But when you look at the hemp plant, there's really three revenue sources. There's the fiber we've talked about, which has traditionally been the main material used from hemp. And then more recently, we've seen a lot of demand for the seed. The seed is a true superfood. It's the richest source of essential fatty acids, omega-6 and omega-3, at the perfect ratios, and it has a complete protein containing all your essential amino acids. And then the third area would be the cannabinoids. And as was discussed earlier, the hemp plant does contain all the same cannabinoids as the marijuana and what we think of as medical marijuana, but by definition, it has to be less than 0.3% THC. So you can't get high off of hemp, but it still has the cannabinoids that provide the medical applications. And in fact, a lot of researchers consider another cannabinoid called CBD, cannabidiol, is potentially having more medical applications than THC. It is non-toxic, non-psychoactive, and there's actually a lot of research being done on it, and even pharmaceutical companies are doing trials with it. And that is the main cannabinoid that we hear about in treating some of these seizure, Dravet syndrome, and other seizure-type situations affecting young people that want to take the medicines from the cannabis but don't want to get high, obviously, for children. And CBD is looking to be a safe way to address these intractable diseases, which do not respond at all to traditional drugs. So, again, a whole host of things. It's considered... It's said that there's more than 25,000 different industrial applications for hemp, again, ranging from the fiber to the seed, an edible superfood, to the cannabinoid, which is more of a medicinal side.
All right. Let me give our phone numbers again. We're talking about hemp and hemp production in Indiana and some of the laws surrounding hemp and all sorts of things. 812-855-0811 in Bloomington. 1-877-285-9348 outside of the Bloomington calling area, wfiu.org/noonedition if you want to join our live chat, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Noon Edition. So I wanted to go back to the legal aspects of this discussion, make sure that I understand what's going on. So at the federal level, hemp is still a controlled substance, and there are bills going through the House and Senate this year to try to change that. What was the law that changed in Indiana last year, and who can grow hemp in the state of Indiana if it's still a controlled substance on the federal level? Who wants to take that one?
I guess I'll take Janet, that because I'm the one who's actually growing the hemp.
There you go. Thank you.
So the Farm Bill set it up so that hemp could actually be examined at a research institution, so that would be an institution like Purdue or IU, the state land grants, to actually evaluate its utility as an agricultural crop. And so what we at Purdue saw was an opportunity. It's kind of that they opened the door, so we wanted to make sure we put our foot in the door. And then we went through the process to we had to fill out forms with the DEA to allow us to actually work with a controlled substance, in this case the seeds of the plant, and then plant these in the field. And we then also worked with the state police to make sure that we were abiding by the laws and rulings, which were sort of being developed on the fly as we were going through this process. So in order to do so, we set up research plots. Our research plots were asking the questions, how do we best grow hemp under different nitrogen inputs in a conventional system and in an organic system? And we originally were hoping to evaluate a variety of different cultivars to see how they performed in Indiana. And unfortunately, we were only able to obtain two, but we were able to evaluate those two to see how they performed and sort of get a feel for the organism and see what things we needed to prepare for in the future, and also to inform growers, farmers who are interested in growing industrial hemp, what some of the issues are in getting this into the ground, established, and productive.
So, Jenna, tell me a little bit about what your research has seen so far. What are you guys taking a look at?
So, you know, it's really funny. I'm a plant pathologist, and when I started this project off, from everything I had read online, you know, hemp doesn't get any diseases, and it's like, I'm not quite sure why I'm doing this project. This is going to be the most boring thing ever for me because it doesn't have any diseases. And then we were confronted with the wettest year on record, and we had a lot of diseases. So my personal research in this project was looking at the pathogens that impact hemp production, and I had a wonderful year for that. I don't think anybody else had a really good year. And then we were looking at the interactions between those and nitrogen and also the different cultivars.
All right. So Jana, just to, again, I want to clarify and make sure that I haven't made a mistake in my opening. So it sounds as if growing hemp in Indiana is under a very strict set of guidelines. Is that correct?
It is. Uh-huh. Right now, unless you're associated with a research university, you're not able to grow hemp. And we took a different approach than the approach that was taken down in Kentucky. Kentucky ended up purchasing large quantities of seeds and then providing those to farmers. And I don't know what research program is going on. I can't speak to that. I don't know what they're doing. But what we decided to do was to do a very small... We only had 2-acre plots. We wanted to make sure that we could do everything in such a way that we didn't want to give anyone a reason to stop us from doing this research.
Right.
So we made sure it was small. We made sure it was controlled. We made sure that it was very explicit. I was, you know, one of my proudest moments was explaining to the DEA office people, you know, the research that I was doing, and, you know, when you see their eyes roll back in their heads, as a scientist, you know you've successfully explained what it is you're doing.
Yep. All right. So from your research, and, you know, what comes next? I mean, we've got George, who's connected to the Indiana Hemp Industries Association, and we've got Alan, who's a North American Industrial Hemp Council. You know, from your research in this small sort of controlled environment that you have, you know, what would be the next step for hemp to become a viable product in Indiana?
I'm going to start with the one area, and then I'm going to switch over to Alan and George. The biggest difficulty we had was in securing seed. And if this is going to become a viable industry in Indiana or in the broader United States, we need to have a reliable seed source in order to provide the seed to growers. And that was one of the biggest findings, I think, that we had. And it obviously isn't a research finding, but we need to develop an agricultural supply chain, beginning with the seed and then ending with the processing. And I think that's a really good segue for George and Alan.
Okay. George?
Well, yeah, a big part of it is still getting the bills passed at the Senate and in the Congress so that we can get it off the Controlled Substances Act. That's going to open it up for a lot of the industry players to want to get involved. It removes a lot of the impediment. So there's the Senate Bill 134, which is in need of co-sponsors, and then there's the companion bill. It's 525 in the House. That would remove industrial hemp from the Controlled Substances Act, opening up the legalization of hemp. And Jana, correct me if I'm wrong, but right now, when you do bring in whatever seed you bring in, under the current law, you have to destroy it at the end of the season. So we're not able
to confirm that.
Go ahead.
Below 0.3% THC, so we did not have to destroy it. Originally, that was the agreement, though, that everything needed to be destroyed.
Okay, so that's opened up. Well, these are the types of things that we need in order to move forward. As Jana mentioned, there's a lot of infrastructure. One of the things I didn't mention earlier was the fiber being used for a lot of the building materials, et cetera, which is a very viable thing. But the issue is we don't yet have the infrastructure here in the U.S., and that's going to have to be built once we know we've got the supply of the fiber and the product. One area that we do have and are ready to scale here in the U.S. is processing of the seeds. So, and most likely what we're going to see first for the commercialization of the food products. Right now, they're imported from Canada and Dublin year on year. And with $6 million of seeds were imported in 2011, this year we're expected to top $100 million. We're seeing a lot of those products go into your Whole Foods. I'm starting to see them, the seeds and the protein in Kroger, et cetera. So your proteins and your edible oils, those rich source of essential fatty acids, omega-6, omega-3, are driving the market. When it comes to actually growing it, though, here in the U.S., and I, you know, Jana will I'd like to defer back to her again, but we do a lot of contract farming overseas, and when we bring new plants to new areas, it generally takes us about 3 years to bring in the various cultivars, to adopt them, and to scale them to pilot projects, et cetera, pilot commercial projects, before there's confidence we know everything we need to know. So that we can promise the farmers to expect, or not promise, but so that we can inform the farmers to expect a certain yield if they follow a certain protocol using very specific seed, et cetera. So I think what's going to happen is that the legal landscape is changing as the research is increasing on the produce side. And I think what we're going to see is an evolution here over the next 2 or 3 years, where we have the research caught up, we have varieties of plant available, supply of seed, as Jana said, the supply chain, where we have farmers then ready to plant, and we've got buyers willing to contract off of those farmers with processors in place. And there are already processors that are starting to process Canadian seed.
Okay. So, yeah, let me get back to that in just a minute. We're gonna I want to give Alan an opportunity to sort of summarize where you think this is before we have to take a short break. So, Alan, I know you have to leave us after the break. On the national level, what chance do these bills have, and how important is it to you?
Well, Bob, I think both Jenna and George have given excellent insight into the issues. There are many issues around this. Hemp was legalized in Canada in 1998 or 1999. And the growth of production of hemp crop in Canada has been slow but steady. At first, in Ontario, a number of farmers jumped on the bandwagon and thought they had a market for the fiber. And they grew fiber varieties, and it was a failure. There was one little company up there that tried to organize to process the fiber, and it never really caught on. But out in Western Canada, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, farmers planted for the seed or the grain, which George has described as a superfood, and that is taking hold, and that's where the primary application for American farmers appears to be at this time. We'll take a lot more research, a lot more development to finally work out the fiber side. It's not inconsiderable, but the priority at the moment would go to the food derivatives and the food uses, and they are many. The congressional legislation is, both are in play, but they're not advanced. They probably will not be during this Congress, which means they'll have to be refiled when the Congress takes over and takes place. There is one Indiana co-sponsor on the House bill. It's Todd Young from Southern Indiana. I think he represents Bloomington.
Yes, he does.
And he has come to understand the issue. there's an effort to educate the balance of our congressional representatives, and I think there's some light at the end of that tunnel. But I think that's
all right.
That's working.
Okay. Well, thank you. I want to thank Alan Kimball for being here with us in the first half of the program.
Thank you for doing that.
George Blankenbaker and Jana Beckerman, we hope you'll just sit tight for a minute or so. We're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
This is Noon Edition on WFIU. Production support comes from Smithville Fiber, online at smithville.com, and IU School of Public Health Bloomington, online at publichealth.indiana.edu. WFIU News covers South Central Indiana and the state each day. You can read news throughout the day as it's posted on our website at wfiunews.org. And you can pick up a digest of all the top stories. It's like a newspaper delivered to your inbox each weekday afternoon. It's a free and easy way to stay on top of not only the headlines, but also the in-depth audio, video, and print news stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe right now at WFIUnews.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times, along with my co-host today, Alexander McCall. And we're talking about hemp and how it's being studied, basically the research being done on it in Indiana, and how that might lead to some full-scale farming of the crop at some point. If you have a question or a comment, please call us at 812-855-0811 in Bloomington, or 1-877-285-9348 outside of the Bloomington calling area. You can also join the live chat at wfiu.org/noonedition, and you can follow us on Twitter at Noon Edition. Alex?
Right before we took a break, we were discussing kind of some legislation that's making its way through the United States Congress regarding hemp. I guess these bills would remove hemp from the controlled substances list. And we do have a caller on the line, Anthony from Bedford. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
I'm sorry, Anthony, can you hold on just a second? We can't hear you.
Okay.
All right.
Can you, yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, you had thank you for taking my call. You had mentioned that the product could be used for 2,500 different applications. So essentially, it seems you'd be competing with like 2,500 different industries out there. And so I'm just wondering, how strong is the lobbyist for the hemp industry? Because you're competing against a lot of other industries.
George?
Well, we have Vote Hemp, and if somebody were to want to take action, and so can actually go to votehemp.com, there's a take action tab. At the national level, we have the Hemp Industry Association, they've been leading efforts to expand the markets for industrial hemp since its founding in 1994. In fact, in 2001, the DEA attempted to ban the hemp imports from Canada, the seeds that Alan was talking about. And the HIA sponsored a legal lawsuit against the DEA, and after 2.5 years, the DEA lifted that ban, allowing for the seeds to come in. But, no, I don't really see it so much as competing. If you think of where its uses are on its superfoods, et cetera, obviously it is a complete protein. It's one of the few in that area other than soy. Right now, for people that are wanting to move away from soy protein, they're going to pea protein, usually with rice. Hemp is a complete protein, so... It is a better choice if we can get economies of scale and get the price in line. When you look at building materials and the fibers, many of those are already being imported. So you don't have local industries that are wanting to protect themselves. You're competing against jute fiber and other things that are coming from overseas countries. And hemp, again, is a better fiber. but we have to have the infrastructure here to process it so that it can be economical and compete. When you look at the building materials, it is, again, for environmentally friendly, there is a movement towards that, and these are the areas that people are latching onto. When hemp building materials are used, for instance, it's non-allergenic, non-toxic, it is fire-resistant, it's mildew-resistant, et cetera. It's a very insulative material, and it has several advantages that companies are actually wanting to enhance their carbon neutral status or enhance their environmental status. They're looking for products to do that. So there's actually, we haven't found any resistance on the commercial side. We've only found proponents asking us, when will it be available? They want to go to carbon neutral. They want environmentally friendly materials, but they want them cheap. And the legalization of hemp, allowing us to grow it here in the U.S., and once we get economies of scale, it'll bring in the industries then to process it. And you'll be building a whole supply chain of new economics from the farmers to the processors to the wholesalers and the retailers. And we've only seen, again, positive support in those areas. The only negative we're running into is misperception that this is somehow a marijuana plant or going to lead to legalization of marijuana. And for those that feel that that's not the right thing, there is a pushback from the misperception that this is either a THC-producing plant or that it's going to lead to legalization of one.
Let me ask you, George. I have an article here from a publication called Modern Farmer, and it actually sort of takes a different approach, I guess. It says it's actually in favor of legalizing hemp farming, but it says that at the same time, the claims of hemp activists are often overblown. I'm quoting here. It's a highly useful, highly versatile crop, but its utility is for the most part fairly marginal, at least going by the size of the existing markets and estimates for how big a domestic U.S. market could be. Do you have a reaction to that? So this publication is saying that, you know, the ideas of what hemp could do for U.S. economy are overblown.
Sure. In the near term, it is going to be a small uptake. Even if you look at soybeans, and that was only several decades ago, they also had a slow start. But then once people understood their uses and the farmers scaled up and the cost economies of scale came in, and then you have industry looking at how to process it and process it more economically, it starts to steamroll. And I already spoke on the superfood aspects of hemp, both its protein as well as its oil. There's considerable demand there. What is the hindrance cost? It's more costly than the alternative proteins or oils. But again, that's an economies of scale issue. And Janet could speak on projected costs from farmers and how it would compete against corn and soy, et cetera. So far, evidence is showing that it will be able to compete as an additional crop, such that the farmers are making adequate money. And again, it's an economies of scale thing. As far as its use in the all these building materials, and again, the 25,000 different industrial uses. Yes, you could say that that's overblown right now, and it's, again, because of cost. If you look at the nonwoven fibers I spoke of earlier, one of the big commercial successes for hemp is being used in the automobile industry for the door panels, et cetera. The hemp costs about 60% more at the moment than the other competing fibers. And these are all the current hemp fiber is imported from Europe, and it's competing against jute, et cetera, which coming from Sri Lanka, et cetera, India. So, again, what we are finding is that people are looking at the process to process the fiber. There's a decorticator. That's the first thing. Well, there haven't been any innovations in the decortication of hemp fiber for decades. And it's only now that people are looking at the potential of that, that they're getting excited and interested to really put efforts into that. So there's several people at this stage that are coming, that are putting work into this. Again, one of the things we're, you're going to find is that as long as it is not legal at the federal level, you're not going to get a lot of big industry putting a lot of money and research into things if they don't know there's going to even be the possibility of scaling this up. Mm-hmm. But once this legal landscape clears up and the researchers such as Purdue and Jana's team are able to say that this is going to be a profitable crop for the farmers to grow, and then you have, on the food side, you've got people already wanting to contract it, and we start getting the economies of scale, that's when you're going to see the industry come in and start looking at how can we efficientize this, make it efficient so that it can compete. And then you're going to see several areas of application.
Thanks,
again,
George.
Yeah.
I just want to take a moment to go back and thank our caller, Anthony from Bedford, and I want to give out our phone numbers again. You're listening to Noon Edition on WFIU, and today we're talking about industrial hemp and all the uses for it. If you're in the Bloomington area, you can give us a call at 812-855-0511, or you can call us toll-free at 877-285-9348. You can join our live chat at wfiu.org/noonedition, or you can send us a tweet at Noon Edition.
Okay, so I want to go back to Jana. You know, we've talked a lot about, the concerns about, you know, hemp and industrial hemp and marijuana. You know, you're studying this at an academic level, obviously, but, you know, from your perspective, I mean, can these two products be separated in a sufficient way that this could become an easily grown crop in the state?
So the two products actually are separated. If you look at industrial marijuana production in Colorado as an example or as a counterpoint, this is a plant that is actually grown in a very high input production sort of fashion. It's grown in a greenhouse. It's grown under very controlled conditions. And all of the plants that are grown are clonal, meaning, you know, they're genetically identical. And that's a very different, and that's to maintain the quality, to maintain a consistency in the level of THC or CBD. When you're growing something industrially out in the field, we don't have very good control over how much sunlight we're going to get, and we certainly don't have as much control over how much rain we're going to get. I mean, we can irrigate when it's dry, but in a year like last year where we had twice as much rain, you can't control things out in the field like you can in the greenhouse. So I think when you look at those two different systems, people will always grow marijuana out in the field. But if you're talking about a medical marijuana or growing recreational marijuana for profit as is legal in Colorado, you need to have much more careful control over your final product in order to maintain quality. For industrial hemp, we're looking at a different product. We're looking at the oil, we're looking at the protein, and we're looking at the fiber. And so I think those two, how they're grown is actually the biggest way to discriminate between them.
And Jana, you're a researcher. I'm sure I would assume you've had the opportunity to speak with researchers in other states who are also researching hemp. What kinds of things are they looking at and experiencing?
The research, there's a lot of people growing, or there's not even a lot of people growing hemp because of the way the farm bill was set up and the difficulty in procuring seed. There is research being done, I believe, up in North Dakota and up in Minnesota where they were evaluating different cultivars to see how they performed, and Colorado, of course, as well. But as far as the research and what they're seeing, there's been a lot of challenges. One, getting the seed, as I keep saying, but the other is consistency in the seed. The fact that hemp hasn't been grown like a crop like corn or soybean, for example, means that a lot of the breeding background isn't there, and some basic agronomic traits that you would expect with an agricultural crop, consistency at time of harvest, consistency in height, consistency in ripening, some of these things are lacking with hemp. Some of it is also the simple consistency of seed germination. A lot of us had problems with variability in germination, and if you don't get a really good germination rate, you don't get a good stand. If you don't get a good stand, you don't get a good yield. So those are some of the problems that we're all seeing. In talking with some growers out in Manitoba, the seed germination and stand establishment has been some of the biggest issues, which goes back to the area that I work in, which is plant pathology and the fungi and microbes that actually prevent that from happening. So that's some of what we're seeing.
Yeah. So to go a little bit deeper in this, I mean, we've, you know, marijuana has been obviously is a huge issue, and it's been in the news in the last few years with legalization in Colorado and Washington. Not sure if there are other states, but those two in particular come to mind. So are we seeing the two different industries blossom in those in state? Let's just take Colorado. Is there an industrial hemp industry that's blossoming similar to, you know, we know that a lot of people are going there, and that they're, you know, the marijuana industry in terms of recreational use,
yeah,
and medicinal use is booming.
Yeah, that's so. Such a great question. It's so insightful because actually there's more legal marijuana being produced than legal industrial hemp. So, you know, marijuana has been legalized for recreational use in several states, and it's also been legalized for medical use in many more. Industrial hemp, though, I believe is only allowed to be grown legally in Colorado, and I'm not even quite sure about that. That one seems so. Again, there's a lot of it's pretty vague.
Yeah.
And, but the thing that's ironic is the fact that, you know, here we have a product that doesn't have any narcotic properties to it. It's been tested to confirm it has no narcotic properties, but there's less production in this industry because the legislation is preventing this widespread, you know, because we would be talking about growing acres as opposed to growing, you know, greenhouse size amounts.
Just to follow up on what you said, this particular story that I quoted from before, it says earlier this month, a farmer in Colorado actually harvested the first legally produced industrial hemp crop in 56 years. But as you just said, it's not even quite legal in Colorado by state law because the regulations governing industrial hemp production aren't set to go into effect until next year. So,
correct.
Okay.
So, and that's what I mean about it being, you know, when you say legal versus illegal, it's a little jiggy still.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay.
And you have to keep in mind that at the federal level, it's legal for research. So if they grow it in Colorado, they would have to consume it in Colorado. If a company were to process and put in a product, at the federal level, this would not be a product that would be able to cross state lines.
Okay. It is complex. The whole issue is complex. I'm trying to get my arms wrapped around it.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to know. And George, maybe you can answer this question. Indiana legislators legalized hemp, and I would be interested to know, you know, why might Indiana be more interested in legalizing hemp than federal legislators might be?
Well, we legalized hemp to. Conduct the research under the Farm Bill Act, passed in 2014. But I think one of the reasons why we would be very interested in legalizing it here in Indiana is if you look at hemp and its history, hemp grows very well wherever corn grows. So if you were to ask someone, you know, where would be the best place to grow hemp, you would think of the Midwest Valley or the Midwest and the Ohio Valley. In fact, if you go back in history during World War II, we had a Grow Hemp for Victory campaign, a film produced by the FDA to encourage farmers to grow hemp because Japan had cut off our fiber supplies during World War II, and the Navy needed the fiber for ropes, et cetera. And it was in the Midwest where almost all of the hemp was grown during that time. So it could be a big boon. I think legislators here are looking at it as potentially being a big boon for farmers as well as processors.
So were you at the event last week in Noblesville or recently in Noblesville? George?
Yes, I was. The Hemp Symposium?
Yeah, so can you explain a little bit about what that was all about?
Well, that was really one of the educational aspects that the Indiana Hemp Industry Association does, and that was to bring together researchers. We had one of the researchers from Purdue, as well as commercial people and farmers, and obviously invited the general public to basically facilitate an educational platform where everybody is bringing up to speed on the legal landscape as well as the research from Purdue side and the potential commercialization opportunities. At the event, there were several companies there that had booths displaying hemp products. All of it right now has to be imported. But it could eventually be made in the U.S. And, in fact, one of the companies there, Foods Alive, they are processing seeds up in their plant in North Indiana. And they make a whole line of food products. So, again, since it's legal, they can contract directly with the farmers here in Indiana and continue to grow their market.
All right. So, Jana, you are a plant pathologist. Have you worked on other plants similar to hemp? And, I mean, how – I'm trying to place, you know, the uniqueness of this project for you.
This is a very unique project.
Okay.
On a variety of levels. I mean, you have such a great history with this plant, and it's also – it's a really quite a beautiful plant to see it growing. It can serve a huge purpose within the Indiana agricultural landscape. You know, currently our big crops are corn and soybean and wheat to a much lesser extent. And hemp can serve as a possible rotation crop, which allows us to diversify. And in the process of creating this diversity, possibly create more sustainability for farmers, particularly small farms and organic farms as well. So the opportunities are really tremendous, and it is a unique one.
Okay, so when you say that it's really pretty, I think you said, I'm not sure if you said pretty or it's really...
It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous to watch. So does it look like, marijuana that you would see on, in various stages?
It doesn't quite look like the same.
Okay.
And that was, one of the most interesting things with this was working with the state police. We worked with some wonderful people, and... When we started growing this, they were scratching their head, and they were like, this does not look like ditchweed. and because it doesn't, it had been bred to produce, oil seeds, so it looks very differently. But then, at another point, you're walking in the field, and my students, reported that on certain days walking through the field, they just directly went home because they didn't want to stop to pick up some fast food or anything else because they smelled like stoners.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it would have a really strong, pungent smell certain times of days, certain days of the week. We could never quite figure out what it was, but it smelled like marijuana.
Uh-huh.
One of my students actually developed an allergy to it as well, which is you see in a lot of field crops. So, it's a really attractive plant. We put pictures up of everything that we did on our website, which is PurdueHemp.org,
okay. If
anyone's interested in looking at what the plant looks like in different stages of development.
And just one last follow-up for you. At Purdue, so you're obviously one of the researchers working on it. How big is the research project? Are there more faculty members besides you?
Yes, there are. And if you can give me a chance to acknowledge a lot of the people
Sure.
who are involved, that would be Ron Turco in agronomy, who's working not only on the soil side of things, but also trying to keep us on the straight and narrow with the legal aspect. There's Kevin Gibson, who spoke at the symposium earlier in the week, and he is a weed scientist. And Brian Young in my department as well is another weed scientist working with us. We have Michael Gunderson, an ag econ, who's trying to develop the budgets so people understand how much money can be obtained if you were to grow this on your farm and how many acres you would need to grow in order to make this a profitable enterprise. Corrine Alexander from Ag Econ has stopped by. Michael Wetstein from Ag Econ has also helped with the project. And food science, George mentioned Foods Alive. And so we have food science people working not just with Foods Alive, but also in the future looking at other possibilities. And that would be Haley Oliver and Lisa Maurer and okay. Amanda Deering. So, I mean, it's a big group trying to figure out how we can kind of get this hemp industry going.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think that really helps summarize this show because it's obviously a big issue in Indiana if you can figure out how to make this all work. So I want to thank you, Jana Beckerman, for being here with us. And also, of course, George Blankenbaker, thanks. You had a whole lot to offer today. We're very much more educated on this issue now. For producer Drew Dodlin, engineers Mike Pashkash and Alexander McCall, my co-host, I'm Bob Zaltzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at WFIU.org.
Production support comes from School of Public Health, Bloomington. Public Health Reimagined, addressing 21st century health challenges with a multidisciplinary approach to disease prevention, health promotion, and enhancing quality of life. publichealth.indiana.edu.
And Smithville Fiber, the GigaCity Company. Fiber Internet, HD, and digital IPTV in Southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com.